Informed beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Well, we all want to be healthy and fit. Yet, we still have some men who refuse to go to the doctor. Tonight, we are taking a closer look at men's health. How do we motivate us, our men, to get those monthly checkups? Do you know someone who struggled with making those doctor's visits? We want to hear from you. It's a Medical Monday. It's an important conversation. We're talking about men's health. Joining us tonight on the phone line, Dr. Adam R. Metawalli, professor and chief of urology at Howard University Hospital. In studio with us is Stan Richards, president of the Richards Group Corporation and author of the book From the Bus to the Bentley, No More Limits. And Stan is a prostate cancer survivor. The phone lines are open. We'd like to hear from you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Stan Richards, we're going to start with you. Share your story with your listeners, with our listeners, about your prognosis with prostate cancer.
Yes.
And you're living with it.
Yes. Well, let me just say, first of all, thanks for having me on the show today. And I'm excited because I'm a big prostate cancer advocate. Okay. But it started for me back in 2014. I had just buried my brother from pancreatic cancer. And then 60 days later, I usually go in to get my annual physical around November. So it was around November 2014. I went to get a physical. And the doctor said, well, your PSA is a little high, and I want to send you to a neurologist. And I didn't know what that mean. I just, you know, I went to a neurologist, and long story short, realized I had an early stage of prostate cancer. And my life changed ever since. From there, I realized that I had a bad food addictions. You know, I tried to change my eating habits and, you know, the sugar, the alcohol and the pasta and all of the things that we eat. And I was also vitamin D deficient as well. And again, come to find out, a lot of my colleagues, I worked for Metro for 18 years driving buses. A lot of blue collar workers, that former colleagues, have or had prostate cancer. And that was a huge shock for me. So today I'm just excited to share my story with the world and just bring awareness to this could be deadly disease.
You mentioned that your brother died of pancreatic cancer. Was there a family history of cancer?
Well, my grandfather had prostate cancer, but no, not pancreatic. You know, and yeah, he actually lived for 9.5 years with pancreatic cancer.
But your grandfather had prostate cancer.
Prostate cancer, yeah.
And Dr. Metawalli, Stan Richards, is Stan emblematic of many men where Stan said he went in, they said see a urologist, he really didn't know what it was about, why he had to go in, was eating bad foods that Stan talks about. Is that one of the major issues with men, what we're doing to sort of end up leading ourselves into the situation that Stan found himself in?
Yes and no. First of all, again, thanks for having me also. But, you know, the issues with food that Stan was talking about are a major issue because one of the leading cause of death among American men and African-American men is heart disease. So our diets are incredibly important in terms of our overall health. In addition, there is increasing evidence to suggest that the diets that we eat do predispose us to certain kinds of cancers. Certainly the typical American diet that's high fat, low fiber, a lot of animal, you know, like red meat and that kind of thing, predisposes you not only to prostate cancer but also colon cancer. So it's multifactorial, but by the same token, prostate cancer is the most common cancer among men, and it's a disease of age.
Mm-hmm.
So if you live long enough, you're probably going to get some kind of prostate cancer.
Oh, that's not good news, doctor.
But most men will not die from it.
I see.
And so, you know, a lot of men have it and they die with it, but they don't die from it. That being said, it's still the second leading cause of cancer death among men. So there are many men who do die from it as well.
Doctor, is there... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the things is, you know, there's a statistic we love to throw around that 80% of men age 80 have a diagnosable prostate cancer. But only 1% to 2% of those men will actually die of prostate cancer. So it's a common disease, and, you know, if it's detected and we know what stage and grade it is, you know, and it's treated appropriately, we can intervene and alter the natural history of that. And just because you have it doesn't necessarily mean that's what's going to get you.
And with it being so common, we know the general test that you should have at least once you hit 50. I think I don't know if they've moved that date back. Is that men should have a basically a rectal exam. And is there still a stigma for men about having that exam, even though you're saying, listen, most men are probably going to get some form of prostate cancer, but is it still hard to get men to go in to have these prostate exams?
It really, really is. In fact, in the last 2 weeks, I've had two men who just flatly refuse the rectal exam, and they're telling me that the PSA test is good enough. And when I tell them, no, in fact, it's not good enough that some prostate cancers are detected with the rectal exam, they are unmoved by this. So there's definitely a stigma that we have to overcome. And to your point, the AUA recommendation for a PSA screening is 50, except for African-American men. That number is actually 40 to 45, depending on your family history.
And why is that, doctor? Why is it?
African-American men are more likely to have prostate cancer, be diagnosed with it, and they're more likely to die from it.
Hmm.
And so African-American men need to be screened at an earlier age. They're also more likely to have a family history. At Howard University, we have a community outreach program called Men Take 10. It's a PSA prostate cancer screening mobile van that goes around the city and does events. And we have been doing this since the mid-90s and have cobbled together some of the data. And what we found is that African-American men were significantly more likely to have a family member with prostate cancer than other ethnicities. And other studies have kind of borne that out as well. So I think it's really important for us to overcome that stigma and have people realize that if you're African-American, you're more likely to have a prostate cancer. You're at a higher risk for being diagnosed with high-grade disease and more likely to die from it. And so, you know, whether you have some association with the rectal exam that it's, you know, not something you want to do, you kind of need to get over that because of the risk that being African-American poses when it comes to prostate cancer.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. It's a Medical Monday, and tonight we're talking about men's health and men taking care of themselves and why we as men tend not to do all of the things we should do. Stan Richards, do you fall into that category of, you know, I don't have time to go to the doctor? Were you one of those?
Well, that wasn't me. I got an annual physical every year, but my thing was, again, I carried a lot of body fat back then. I'm actually in the best shape of my life at 58 after I was diagnosed. So the blessing that came out of this is that I started taking my health very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But I went to the doctor every year. I didn't feel any different, you know, except for I had carried a lot of belly fat. You know, my BMI was around 33%, which is kind of high for my body weight.
Mm-hmm.
And so other than that, you know, I always went to the doctor, but I do have a few friends that I can't figure out why we won't go to the doctor. I actually last June I put together a 5K for prostate cancer awareness. And would you believe that I had over 80% women registered for this 5K and very few men? We're unbelievable.
Dr. Metawalli, you know, we've seen it, and you read statistics, and it says that, you know, women tend to be more proactive. They tend to be more involved with preventative health. Maybe it's because they go to OBGYNs, you know, more often. They go to get their checkups, and they're considered, you know, I've read where they're considered leaders, right, in healthcare in America, more so than men. So why is it, if we have all of this information out there, right, why are men still so hesitant to sort of be proactive instead of reactive?
I think that it's multifactorial, and it's a great question. Certainly, you know, we talked about the stigma, and that doesn't just apply for prostate cancer. There are a lot of men who refuse to get colonoscopies for colon cancer and won't allow a doctor to do the rectal exam for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's a macho stigma about anything having to do with your backside that I think really inhibits us. I think that men in general, we're sort of raised to be tough. And if something's bothering you, you just like, well, walk it off, rub some dirt on it. We'll be fine. Just ignore it and it'll go away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while that may serve us well, you know, on the basketball court or on the gridiron, you know, when it comes to your health, that's really, really detrimental. Because these things don't tend to go away. They just get worse over time. And, you know, it's interesting because we recognize that the women really are far more proactive in terms of their health. And so we had a men's health awareness conference at Howard a couple of months ago, and one of the targets was actually women, and we appealed to them to make their men, their brothers, their fathers, their husbands, come and see the doctor.
Hmm.
And, you know, we found that we have more success doing that than appealing to men directly, sadly.
Well, I guess that's just how it works. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. However we get to the doctor, whether it's the wife pushing us, we need to get there. Let's go to the phone lines, and Kelvin is calling from Maryland with a question or comment. Go right ahead, Kelvin.
Yes. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a question. A little earlier, you had indicated that the importance of the digital rectal exam as opposed to the PSA. I'm curious to know what other types of cancers would be identified through the digital rectal exam as opposed to that may not be found on the PSA.
Dr. Metawalli, can you address that?
Sure. And I'm not saying that the digital rectal exam is more important than the PSA. Really what it is that at this point, the digital rectal exam plus the PSA is the best way to detect for prostate cancer. There are some cancers you pick up with the rectal exam only, and there are some cancers that you pick up only with a PSA. And so when you put the two together, you're picking up all the possible, not all the possible cancers, but as many possible cancers as we can, you know, currently. Now, there's other technologies that are coming online that may eventually allow us to get away from doing the digital rectal exam. Prostate MRI is one of those things, but obviously that's really expensive. You know, it costs several thousand dollars to get an MRI. A lot of insurances won't pay for it in early stage undiagnosed disease. And, you know, a rectal exam is cheap and it's free, basically. And so it's still part of, you know, an important part of the diagnostics for prostate cancer. And there's also a test that you can do to look for colon cancer that involves the rectal exam as well. But there are other tests that are being developed where you can kind of get away from that also. So, I mean, technology is moving us in the direction where we may be able to get away from it, but we're not there yet. But the two cancers, to answer the caller's question directly, that the rectal exam is useful for would be prostate cancer and to some degree colon cancer.
Thank you so much for your question, Kelvin. Stan Richards, the doctor had talked about they were targeting the wives to help the men get to the doctor. And you mentioned that you regularly, you know, went and got your regular checkups,
yeah,
right? But yet you held a 5K that was bringing awareness to cancer. And what I think you said 80% of the people that showed up were women. Did I get that right?
Yeah, something like that? Absolutely. It's just.
So what did your wife play a role and getting you to the doctor, being aware, even though I know you said you went every year, what role did your significant other play in your health?
Well, my wife has always been very supportive, but I've just, for many years, I've always got an annual physical. I've never had a problem with that because I always wanted to know what was going on inside of my body, especially, again, when my brother was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer back in 2005. It really shook me.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation, but we're going to bump over to the other side. We're talking about men's health. How can men better take care of themselves? What support can they get or need to do that? Maybe to push them to the doctor, to eat better, to exercise. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. This important conversation is going to continue. But right now, it's the Daily Drum on WHUR and HUR Voices. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. We'll be right back. Up next is Jeff Brown with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. We'll be right back on SiriusXM Channel 141.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on HUR Voices, SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Well, tonight it is a Medical Monday, and our focus is on men, specifically men's health. How can we be healthier? How can we ask for help? How can we get information? Why aren't we going to the doctor more often? Is it a masculine thing? Why don't we get more prostate exams on a regular basis? That and more is what we're talking about tonight, and the phone lines are open. We'd like to hear from you. Suggestions, experiences you've had. Are you a significant other who's had to help prop your man up and get him into the doctor? We want to hear from you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight to help propel this conversation on the phone line with us is Dr. Adam R. Metawali. He's a professor and chief of urology at Howard University Hospital. And in studio with us is Stan Richards, president of the Richards Group Corporation and author of the book From the Bus to the Bentley, No More Limits. And Stan is a prostate cancer survivor, 3 years and counting. Again, the phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to those phone lines. Pam is calling from Silver Spring. Go right ahead, Pam, with your question or comment. Still there, Pam? All right, maybe we'll check back at Pam. We'll come back to Pam. Let's go to Kevin calling from Maryland with a question or comment. Go right ahead, Kevin.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
I'm calling because I think some of the problem that goes on with the prostate situation is you get so many different opinions, and I guess it depends on who you're talking to, who you believe. But my dad just recently passed this July from a 17-year battle with prostate cancer. It started with prostate. You know, he was able to get the surgery, and then, complications came back after the five-year mark. So I've been recently since I'm 45 now. Since 40, I've been getting the regular test. Now, the first 3 years, I was doing the anal test or whatever, but now my doctor is telling me that when you do that test, sometimes it can be irritated and it can give you false numbers. So what we've been doing the last 2 years, because I get checkups every year now, is making sure that I'm doing the PSA test to make sure the levels are low. And that's what we've been going by. But I just want to make sure, is that all we should be doing? Or is it true about, you know, when you do the prostate exam, it can be irritated so you can get false numbers?
Dr. Metawali?
Yeah, so there was a study that came out a number of years ago that showed that there's a small temporary increase in the PSA after what is described as a vigorous rectal exam. I generally think that doesn't matter all that much. If the PSA goes up by a little bit, I'm not sure it really makes a huge amount of difference. In most cases, But that being said, if you're worried about that, then the thing to do is have the patient get their blood drawn a week before they come and see you in clinic, and then you do the rectal exam at the time of the clinic evaluation. You know, since you kind of know what you're going to be ordering anyway,
right.
You just have them get their blood drawn a week beforehand. That way you know what the PSA is, and then you do the rectal exam. As I said, I think that a lot of doctors will defer the rectal exam because patients don't like it, and they, you know, doctors don't particularly like doing it either. And as long as somebody's relatively low risk, you know, it's not maybe necessary to do it every year. And that's one of the things that we've learned from our European colleagues, is that screening isn't something necessary every year. It really depends on what risk category you're in. So this gentleman, for example, with a father who died of prostate cancer, would be in a higher risk category, probably does need to be screened on a fairly regular basis. But if you're a young man and you have a PSA less than one, you probably don't need to be screened every year. You know, and by young man, I mean in your 40s or early 50s, you might be able to go every other year or every 3 years, depending on what the number is.
Yeah, I'm 45, so, and like I said, I've been doing it for the last 5 years, and thank God, you know, my number's been coming back fine. But I know that, like you were saying, the actual exam is probably the most accurate thing. And like I said, the last 2 years, we've just been going by the PSA numbers. That's also been good. So I just want to, because my dad did pass, I'm just trying to make sure I'm doing everything I can. And then, you know, that's all you can do, you know, really.
Well, thank you.
And I thank you for setting that example for your friends and your kids and everything else. Because, I mean, we have to start taking control of our own health as men. And, you know, the more of us who are doing it, the more it's going to be seen as the thing to do rather than, you know, the other way, which most of us do, which is, you know, it'll be fine if I just ignore it.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Thank you so much. And then best of luck with your health. It's interesting what Dr. Medawali said to Kevin, Stan, you know, lauding him for what he was doing, the example that he was setting for his children, specifically probably if he, you know, I guess if he has a son. You and I have at least a son around the same age, 14 or 15.
Yeah.
Does that come into your thought process of what you're doing? You know, we always think of the example you want to set for your son in terms of working, taking care of the family, you know, doing the things you're supposed to do. But I think sometimes we may forget about taking care of ourselves, going to the doctor. Did your consciousness of that become more heightened after your diagnosis, or did you always have that, or does it come into play?
I think it really came into play after I was diagnosed, because, you know, it was definitely life changing for me. And I made sure my sons, you know, they're very up on a prostate cancer. And we talked about the family history, and we also talked about their eating habits. So they have very good eating habits, unlike I did, especially, you know, growing up in the inner city of D.C. and all of the struggles that we had to go through with the whole food thing.
And what do you mean by who may not know? I think I know what you mean, but specifically what in terms of having good products in the city, having the best grocery stores, having the money to buy vegetables, fruits, vegetables?
Well, I think for me, and I share my story in my book, you know, coming from very humble beginnings, one of the goals for me, you know, growing up in the hood was to, you know, be able to eat whatever I wanted to eat once I became a man.
Just eat.
Just eat. That was on the list for me. Like, you know, when I make money, I want to eat all the steaks. I want to eat all the fried chicken.
Right.
And, you know, drink all of the drinks and all of the other things, the Cokes and Pepsis and everything like that. And it was just bad habits. You know, until, you know, I was diagnosed and became conscious, and then came to realize how addicted I was to food.
Mm.
You know, now I got much better eating habits, and I got more control of my eating. But, it was pretty bad. So I do set a great example for my kids on, you know, they drink water. We don't have sodas and things like that in the house. But I do have a quick question for Doc, for me, I remember my numbers was very low when I was diagnosed. But however, by me being an entrepreneur, I like to ask the question, how do you think, Doc, that stress comes into play, because my PSA when I was very first diagnosed was in the early stages at Johns Hopkins, was around 6. And then I went through a very stressful time. Within 6 months, it went from 6 to 14.
Wow.
So I'd like to ask Doc, how do you think that stress comes into play, you know, when you, you know, with prostate cancer?
You know, it's a great question. And in the interest of full disclosure, I'm going to tell you, I don't know. We know that stress has negative effects on cardiac health. For sure.
Hmm.
How it affects cancer and cancer dynamics is really not at all well understood. Generally speaking, you know, I tell most of my patients that, you know, a heart healthy diet is a prostate healthy diet, you know, and a heart healthy diet is a penis healthy diet when we're talking about erectile dysfunction. And so generally speaking, things that are bad for your heart are bad for the rest of you as well. It's hard to know exactly why your PSA went from 6 to 14. It might have been a change in the tumor biology. Was that affected by the, you know, increase in stress that you had? It's not impossible, but what that mechanism would be hard to say at this point.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our focus tonight is men's health. Let's go back to the phone line.
I'd like
line.
To say one other thing.
Sure, go right
okay,
ahead, doctor.
Really quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that Stan touched on that I think is really, really important to emphasize is that, you know, healthy foods are not necessarily the most obtainable. The easiest mm-hmm. things to get are usually not that good for you. You know, bags of potato chips and, you know, fast food hamburgers and that kind of stuff. And the truth is that, you know, we talk about various things that affect our communities and our health. And one of the things, you know, the elephant in the room, no pun intended, is the obesity epidemic. And when you have a BMI that's over 30, you are obese. And that increases your risk of cardiovascular mortality, strokes, joint problems, you know, all sorts of things, diabetes. And so healthy eating habits really is at the root of a lot of this stuff. We know that bad diets can lead to different kinds of cancer. Drinking too much alcohol causes liver failure, can cause esophageal cancer, can cause pancreatic issues. And so one of the things that I think we don't get taught as men, generally speaking, and as people here in America, is the importance of good nutrition and what that actually means. We have a very distorted idea about what a normal portion size is in food. And what healthy food is, what's a normal amount of protein that you should take in, and that sort of thing. I mean, our ideas, you know, I was reminiscent of my attitudes toward food, like when I'm an adult, I'm going to eat a steak every day, you know, but the idea of what a normal amount of red meat should be for a man, a grown man, is actually way less than what we all think it is, what we've been raised to believe it is. And that directly relates to the high incidence of cardiovascular mortality that we see, obesity, diabetes, and, you know, all the things that also tie in with the cancer rates that we talk about.
Well, Dr. Metawalli, when you say that, and I'm sort of paraphrasing, that we're really misinformed, right, about a lot of these things, how do we get better informed? You know, what measures do we take to become better informed? Do we read? Do we go on the internet? Do we go to the doctor, ask for information, ask for pamphlets?
I would certainly, you know, talk to your doctor, see if they have any resources. I think you got to be careful about the internet. There's a lot of good information on the internet, and there's mm-hmm. a lot of crazy information on the internet, and it's totally unfiltered. You know, so it kind of depends on what your background is. If you have a little bit of, you know, background in, you know, the sciences and that kind of stuff, you may be able to sift out what's garbage from what makes sense. But I think that there are good websites, you know, the American Dietitian Association and, you know, places like Howard University, you know, website or Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic, they often will have a lot of good information. Certainly at Howard University, we have 3 centers of excellence, one of which is our bariatric surgery program, which is surgical weight loss, and we have a lot of good information about what good nutrition is. And you don't necessarily have to want to undergo surgery for your obesity to enroll in the program because that gives you access to nurse navigators and dietitians and people who have the information about what a healthy diet is and what are sane and sensible ways to lose weight and eat right and those kind of things.
So the information is out there. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before we take a quick break, let's go back to the phone lines. Will is calling from Dallas, Texas. Oh, Will, I'm sure you're not too happy after that game last night in New England. That's if you're a Cowboys fan.
Hey, we'd be okay.
Look, you're much better off than we are right here.
Yeah, well, you know, you're right. As a matter of fact, I'm from that area. I moved here from PG County about 3 years ago.
Oh, okay.
When I was diagnosed with the prostate cancer, right now I'm 11 years saved. And I was diagnosed, but I took the second, what they call the second opinion program, came out of North Carolina, and I went down to Johns Hopkins. And unfortunately for me, my roommate, we went for the same thing. And the gentleman that wrote the book on the radical prostheses, Kenneth, and his last name escapes me. But he signed a book for me. I kept in touch with him. My doctor name was Mr. Moswick, very good guy from, I forget the country he was from. But anyway, he was well-versed. And like the doctor said, don't get caught up in that test. When you go in and that guy give you that prostate exam, this guy told me, he said, I can give you an exam and tell you exactly how many lesions you have. I went in and he did the prostate exam. He told me I had six. My test came from North Carolina. I had exactly six lesions. You can't beat that.
Well, I'm happy to hear, Will, that you're doing well, that you're healthy. And, you know, keep surviving down there in the land of the Cowboys since you're a transplant. Hopefully you're still a Burgundy and Gold fan. But more importantly, that you're healthy. Thank you so much for calling, Will, and your advice. We appreciate it. We're going to continue this conversation. The phone lines are still open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. It's a Medical Monday. Milton, stay right there. We'll get you right after this quick break. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on HRR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. It is a Medical Monday, and tonight we're specifically talking about men's health. How can men stay healthier? How can we take care of ourselves? How can we eat better? How can we exercise? How can we make sure we go to the doctor on the regular, which is probably the most important thing, not a hit and miss here or there. Phone lines are open. We'd like to hear from you. We've heard some great comments about men and how they've taken care of themselves and the tests that they're taking and information that they get, sharing it with our listeners. Phone lines are open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's go back to those phone lines. Milton is on the line calling from Virginia. Go right ahead, Milton.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
All right. I always enjoy your program. And I'm just wondering, I've listened to some of the callers, and one of the things that, you know, often comes up, I hear people, you know, they talk about the tablets like the salt palmetto tablets and how much does that play a part in just good prostate health.
Did you hear that question, Dr. Metawiley?
I sure did. So, you know, it's interesting. Salt palmetto is one of the few natural agents that's actually been reasonably well studied. You know, one of the hard things about being a doctor is that people will come and say, well, what about this beta prostate or what about this supplement? You know, and there's a bunch of stuff in there like fenugreek and other pumpkin seed extract and all these things, none of which has been particularly well studied. So it's hard to kind of point people in the right direction there.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. Salt palmetto has actually been studied pretty well. And what salt palmetto does is it actually lowers the PSA, which you would think would be a good thing, except it can mask a prostate cancer sometimes, you know, by artificially suppressing the PSA level. And it was used to help men with voiding symptoms, like getting up at night to pee, weak stream, and that kind of thing. And when they studied it head-to-head with other medications like finasteride and tamsulosin, it turns out it doesn't really work any better than placebo. So while it does have this effect on PSA, it hasn't been shown in randomized trials to actually really help very much with voiding symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
It's never been studied in terms of prostate cancer. So, you know, we extrapolate a little bit about whether or not it's potentially harmful by you know, artificially suppressing the PSA.
202, thank you so much, doctor. Okay. I hope that helps, Milton. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I have a few moments left to get some more phone calls in. Stan Richards, we kind of know that one of the obstacles for us men, right, is how we prioritize things in terms of our health. And a lot of times we prioritize work, right, over, say, going to the doctor. Here you are, president of your own corporation, author of a book. How do you balance all of that while still trying to take care of your health?
Well, it's what I do is, you know, I prioritize it by, you know, making sure that putting my health first, because your health is your wealth. And that's a true statement there. So I make sure that, you know, I take time the first thing in the morning to pray and meditate. That's the first thing I do in the morning. And then I do a boot camp. I work out 6 days a week now, you know. And
had you done that prior to your diagnosis?
No. So this really helps me, and it relieves the stress, and it helps me to actually run my business and do well in business because, you know, I'm getting the exercise and I'm getting the meditation in. And now I'm not carrying the stress that I used to carry from, you know, just being an entrepreneur and a businessman.
Dr. Metawalle, how often should men go to the doctor? Is there a number?
I think that at least annually, you should be getting a checkup.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, you know, particularly when you get into your, you know, mid to late 30s, early 40s, you should be seeing your primary care doctor, same guy or gal, every year. You know, you need to have somebody with whom you have a relationship. They know you. You know them. Mm. So, you know, if you have a different doc every year, it sometimes it's a little hard to put things into context.
Mm-hmm.
If I come to you 1 year and my blood pressure is 130 over 85, you might think that's okay. But if the year before it was 100 over 60, that might be your first clue that something is changing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, without that context, I think it's really you can miss a lot of things. That's why, you know, the absolute PSA number isn't necessarily as important as how it's changing over time. And rapid changes in a short period of time are definitely concerning. Low volume changes over a long period of time really aren't that concerning. So, you know, you only will know that if you go see your doctor on a regular basis and it's the same person, they have all your records and they can kind of follow these things along. So it's really, really important to establish that relationship. And once you do, your doctor's going to tell you how often you need to come in. You know, if you've got a lot of problems, you're overweight and diabetes and hypertension, they're probably going to want to see you more often than once a year. If you're pretty healthy and you don't take any medicines, they may only want to see you once a year.
Got it. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Men's health, our focus tonight. Let's go back to the phone lines. James is calling from California. Go right ahead, James.
Yes, James from California, from Victorville, Harvard University graduate.
All right, James.
Yes, H.U. A question for the doctor. So can you talk a little bit about or distinguish between having an enlarged prostate and some of the symptoms associated with having an enlarged prostate versus prostate cancer and some of those symptoms? Because sometimes they could be a little similar. From what I understand, in terms of certain problems that you have, you know, with restroom issues.
You're absolutely right. You are absolutely 100% right. There's a huge amount of overlap there. And that's one of the reasons why primary care docs will send men to the urologist when they start having a new onset of symptoms, because while the PSA may be normal, maybe something else is changing. So an enlarged prostate is a very common thing, and it's benign. It's not cancer. And I have men all the time ask me, why is my prostate enlarged? And I say, well, why does Will Smith have such big ears? Or why does Russell Wilson have such big hands? It's just kind of the way you're made. And there are some men who have really, really big prostates and don't have any symptoms. And there are some men who have normal-sized prostates and have a lot of symptoms. So that's why you need to see the urologist to kind of sort out whether it's just avoiding problem, you know, your difficulty emptying your bladder, or whether there's something really serious going on with your prostate. And sometimes it doesn't have to do with the size, it has to do with the shape of your prostate. And so, you know, this is why, you know, we need to see the doctor and have them check it out. And sometimes that's where the rectal exam comes in. It's not so much that you're worried about prostate cancer, but how big is this thing? Your prostate's only supposed to be about the size of a walnut, but sometimes it's as big as a grapefruit.
Well, doctor, I've been told that it increases as we get older, that it starts off very small, and as you get older, it will increase in size. Is that true?
I think that's true for many men. That's not true for all men, but that's true for many men. And one of the things that's interesting is, you know, testosterone is what causes prostate tissue to grow and prostate cancer to grow. And so as men age, you know, your testosterone peaks kind of in your 30s, I think, and then begins to kind of dwindle off after that. But a lot of men will have continued prostate growth, and, you know, maybe it's the same thing like men's ears or their noses where they kind of get bigger as you get older. But it's true for some men that these things continue to enlarge as you get older, and you have increasing symptoms. One of the things that I think people don't appreciate is that with an enlarged prostate and you're relatively young, you probably aren't having many symptoms, but as your bladder gets weaker and begins to decompensate because it's had to push very, very hard to get your urine out, that's when the symptoms really start. So it doesn't have so much to do with the change in the prostate, but actually decompensation of your bladder over time, much like men go into heart failure after they've had years and years of high blood pressure.
All right. Thank you so much, James, and thank you for your comment and your connection to Howard University. In our last few moments, Dr. Medawalli, I did want to ask you this. One of the things that you read and doing research is that often we men will leave out things when we see our doctor. We won't tell them things. How true, how prevalent is that as our music's playing? If you can give me a quick sort of synopsis on that.
It's very, very common, and I actually really like it when I'm in with a man and his wife is there because she usually fills in the blanks.
All right.
Honey, why don't you tell him about this? Honey, why don't you tell him about that?
Yes.
So, I mean, this is about us taking control of our health and being more responsible stewards of our own health.
Got it. And Dr. Medawalli, do you have any suggestions where folks can go just to get information, men, on taking care of themselves, anything in general, or just talk to their doctors?
Absolutely. I think talking to your primary care doctor, and if you don't have one, get one. That's the best place to start. The American Cancer Society, the American Urological Association, they all have, good information as well.
Gotcha. And Stan Richards, tell us a little bit about where folks can get your book, From the Bus to the Bentley, No More Limits.
Right on my website, StanRichardsOnline.com.
And tell us a little bit in a few seconds about the Richards Group Corporation. What do you got going on?
What's Richards happening? Group Corporation, me and my wife, we actually have a brand called Love and Business, and we have a huge event coming up December 6th and 7th, and they can get more information at loveandbusiness.net.
All right, Stan Richards, thank you so much for joining us. Cancer survivor and Dr. Adam Medawalli, he's the professor and chief of urology at Howard University Hospital. Thanks to all our callers. That's the Daily Drum on
HR. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Doctor. That's the Daily Drum on HR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, November 25th. I'm Bramante Bryan in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night.